104.7 Adelaide's Triple M ruined its for breakfast. Rue, the Facebook situation, I've got to admit I'm a dunce. I don't quite understand what's going on. Do you?
Well, I don't follow it myself a lot, but listen to this for companies in South Australia. SA Health, SA Water, SA Power Networks, the Bureau of Meteorology, Sturt Footy Club, and so many other businesses and charities and organisations around South Australia. So it's going to have a massive effect in the short term.
Well, we were told this is all about news and paying for news. Why were they shut down? Why were those organisations shut down? It's mind-scratching. It really is. Mark Pesce, you'll know him with his magnificent podcast, The Next Billion Seconds. You can find it on the Listener app, the brand-new Southern Cross Stereo app called Listener. Mark is a futurist and honorary associate in digital cultures at University of Sydney. Mark, good morning. Why would organisations like these be closed down?
Well, effectively what happened was Facebook decided that they were going to pull all of the news sources, both in Australia and internationally, from Facebook users' news feed and make it impossible for people to post those news. And Facebook loves to use algorithms, so they implemented some sort of algorithm that cut all of that out, but also cut out all of these other organizations, the Batuta Advocate, NASA, all of these South Australian organizations, BOM. All of them got cut out at the same time because they basically used a very broad brush.
Mark, as you know, we're in the middle of a pandemic. I think everyone understands that. SA Health is a vital site for everybody. They were closed down yesterday, temporarily, by the way, but they're not going to be too popular here, Facebook, are they?
No, I think they've really managed to upset a lot of people. Part of it's because we've suddenly realized how dependent we are on Facebook.
Exactly.
And some of it's how capricious Facebook was yesterday.
So what do you think is going to happen? Are they going to do a bit of a backflip and fix up the algorithms and get it sort of back to where maybe it might be a bit more manageable? Or do you think even at that level it's still going to be pretty annoying for a lot of people?
Look, I do feel like they are dialing back everything. They're apologizing. They're trying to restore a lot of these sites. I think a lot of the devil's going to be in the details about which sites are considered news and which sites are not. I think Facebook wants to make a point about the fact that they shouldn't have to pay for news. I don't agree with them, but that's their stand on this. And so I think we're going to see this narrowed down to focus specifically on organizations that there's broad agreement are news, and people won't be able to share those or read those in their Facebook feed.
So was it just Australia targeted, or were we unlucky, or?
Australia is being made an example of because if the law passes here, and it still has to go through the Senate, it hasn't even gone through the Senate yet, which is why this is so shocking, because Facebook did this before they had to do it. They were basically making an example of us because Canada and France and several other countries are looking at similar laws and looking at how we go here.
I see where overnight British MPs are the first from around the world to support us and say, this is like schoolyard bullying, you know, don't bow to Facebook here. So this can and will actually travel around the world, won't it?
Absolutely. And we know that the Prime Minister was talking to the Prime Minister of India last night, trying to get his support as well to stand up to Facebook.
So Facebook, from what I read this morning, is worth about $525 billion. So they've got money, but that can run out pretty quickly. If you have to pay for news in every nation around the world, it won't last long, even though it's a big amount of money.
Well, the thing is they're making money. People maybe don't understand how Facebook works. If someone posts news, the reason it ends up in your feed is because Facebook has chosen to show you that specific news item because it knows it's going to keep you on Facebook, looking at Facebook longer and seeing Facebook's ads. So Facebook is actually making money off of that post. So that does make sense to me, and I think to the government, that some of that money gets shared back to the news organization that created that post. So they won't go broke. They will make less money.
Yep, for sure. Mark, thanks so much for joining us. Mark Pesce, you can check out his podcast, The Next Billion Seconds, on the Listener app. He's also at the University of Sydney working in digital cultures. Ruined it's here on Triple M. Ru, a couple of juicy rumours. We know the story of Eddie Maguire of about a week ago, forced to stand out. I want to say forced to public opinion, and perhaps his own board in the end got to him and said, you know, time to stand down for what had transpired.
Well, he didn't want to get in the way of the footy club this year, and I think he did the right thing in the end.
An interesting take on it, just going off on a tangent, Jeff Kennett this week said, so Dan Andrews can oversee the pandemic in his own state and 800 people die. He still got his job. Eddie Maguire makes a gaffe verbally and he's forced to fall on his sword.
Yep.
We do see things differently, don't we? A source close to us has suggested that Eddie has been told by Fox Footy to stand down for 12 months. So, as you know, Eddie is a big, big part, and you work for Fox. You're one of the commentators.
Yep.
Eddie hosts a lot of their football coverage and commentates the odd game.
Does a lot. He hosts Friday night. He does Saturday afternoon. He does shows during the week.
So the next part of this fallout is that I'm led to believe he's been told by Fox management to stand down for 12 months.
Well, we haven't had any meetings for Fox yet, but they do start pretty soon, so it'd be interesting to see if that is correct. So that's obviously a good moment for you to go with that.
Hmm.
So you don't reckon he'll be on the Fox coverage this year?
From what I'm led to believe, yeah. Now, he's been asked to stand down, but we know Eddie as well. Will he stand down? And I just wonder if it's the start of things to come. And I hope not, because like I said, look, he has made a mistake.
I think he just needs a rest.
He's acknowledged his mistake. And he said, I try hard all the time. And yes, I'll get things wrong, but I never stop trying. And we're all in that same
he's
category.
He's not going to be permanently bumped. There's no way in the world.
No.
He's too good.
All right. So that's the Eddie McGuire rumour, the story this morning. The other one I've got, Roo, might not interest you that much, but there are repercussions here. The Commonwealth Games, and I think when I say it won't interest you much, when we talk Commonwealth Games,
I
think we all do. And Australia wins a lot of medals, and we dominate. For the first time in, I think, my living history, I'm in my 50s, we won't see the Commonwealth Games televised. No one is interested in picking up the TV rights. Can you believe that?
Is that right?
Mm. Now, and this is absolute rigidity. I say it's a rumour. This is true. So no one is at the moment putting their hand up to televise the Commonwealth Games.
When's it meant to be?
Middle of next year.
2022.
Birmingham. No one rates them. When I say no one, the TV networks don't want to fork out the cash because it's not cheap.
No, it wouldn't be.
Big exercise, and you've got to go overseas. They're in Birmingham in the UK. Can you imagine that? Normally, we are accustomed to sitting on the couch every night, especially with the time difference in the UK and seeing Australians win all sorts of medals. We won't see it. And I just want to, I'll expand on this quickly, all right? So I've read a report that says sports rights in Australia, New Zealand are not sustainable. So this is going to, the reason I'm reading this out about the Commonwealth Games, that goes into other sports. For instance, you know the blue with Channel 7 and cricket recently at the start of summer?
Yep.
Channel 7 said, we no longer want to pay as much as we agreed to. And
yep.
Cricket Australia said, well, bad luck. You've agreed to it. 7 are saying, we don't want to pay it now. It's not sustainable.
But is that because cricket was on the nose and Big Bash has been flogged with an inch of its life?
Yeah, but that's cricket could argue, though. But hang on, you signed a deal.
Oh, of course they can. But what are you alluding to, that footy's going to drop off?
Well, all these sports. Well, let me go on, okay? A-League. The A-League has had to take a 35% discount, that's soccer in this country, in the last 2 years from Foxtel. Yeah, but again, there's a network that went with that signed an agreement.
A-League's on the nose, isn't it?
Well, whether they are or not, Roo, you can't sign, I don't think you can sign an agreement.
No, you can't.
And then go, hang on, the last 2 years, I don't want to pay what I agree.
No, you can't.
Right? KO and Foxtel subscriptions for sport are down 33%. Now, Optus, as we know, over the last couple of years has owned the EPL, English Premier League, so that's not on any mainstream television. Stan, the Channel 9, what do you call it, streaming service, has just bought the rights to all Wallabies games. So mainstream networks are not lining up to pay for these mainstream sports.
Mm.
And the Commonwealth Games won't be televised. So where's this all heading is what I'm saying, Roo.
Mm. Yeah,
it's not good, is it?
No, it's not.
And we're not big countries. Australia and New Zealand, we're not massively populated like the US, the UK and Europe. And the headline says sports rights in our countries are not sustainable.
The only thing I'd say about all of those examples is they're all sports on the decline at the moment for whatever reason, whether it's cricket, A-League, Commonwealth Games.
The subscription one's not good though. That's leading to all of this. So KO, Foxtel are down 33%.
You could argue there too, like years ago, we didn't have all those different options. Have we got too many options? Are there too many ways you can watch football at the sport at the moment?
Yeah, maybe.
Because people who got KO probably used to have Fox.
Yeah.
So is there too many options? But anyway, the point is that they don't want to pay as much for at least those sports.
Mm.
So wait and see what happens with footy and the NRL. They're probably the two big sports in Australia.
Yep.
The top five things we've learned on Ruined It's this week. Number 5. Roo went in for surgery for his vasectomy last week.
How are the Jets crackers going, by the way?
Fantastic.
You haven't given us an update.
Apparently, everyone was talking about Roo's private parts.
I've been asked all weekend, people are so concerned about your downstairs department.
Yeah, it's fine.
The number of people asking me about your testicles.
Yeah, it's a good conversation.
And I sort of keep saying, quite honestly, it's not my favourite topic. I don't care about his...
Roo has already taken his new equipment for a test drive.
I gave him a run Saturday night when I was...
You fired a shot.
Just to check him out. Jeez, I was nervous. And then when it all went smooth, I tell you what, my heart rate dropped.
Oh, hell. Crack it. Have a beer. Have a cigarette.
It still works. Thank God. Oh.
Number 4. We chatted to Chris Dittmar's first girlfriend.
Good morning.
We learned not much has changed over the years.
Jackie, thanks for joining us. What was a little 15, 16-year-old Chris Dittmar like? Describe him.
No, he was very romantic. He used to write me letters once a week.
There you go. Write your letters.
There you go.
Yes. Do remember he was always whinging about his sore knees.
Hasn't stopped.
Ah, yes, the knees. How many knee operations have you had again, Dits?
You won't believe this. This is number 14.
14 ops on both knees?
Yes, yeah, so across both. Yeah, my left was the worst, so initially I had a reconstruction.
Anyway, number 3. Tom Rockcliffe from Port Adelaide Footy Club came in for some work experience.
Why on earth would you want to come and watch this garbage?
I wanted to have a chat to you sober for the first time.
And when it comes to reading the sport, we learnt he's got a bit to learn.
Here with the Overnight Sport, our work experience kid from Port Adelaide, Tommy Rockcliffe.
To tennis, Novak Djokovic. He'll face little-known Russian qualifier Aslan Karatev. Ash Barty is on court this morning against 25th seed Caroline Muchova. Is that how you say it?
Yeah, that'll do.
Tommy, sit back and listen how a professional does it, mate.
And an ozone sterilizer. Sterilization. Yeah, that's a mouthful. I can't spit that one out.
Sol. Well, how do you get canola out of... QU. How do you get that if you've never heard of the word?
How do you say that?
Sterilisation.
Number 2. Valentine's Day is old news. This week, we wanted to learn who Adelaide's most unromantic person was. And second prize goes to George.
I tried to do the right thing and cook the missus a meal when I grabbed the wrong meat. It was for the dogs and she got sick. So not popular.
What sort of dog meat have you cooked up?
Just old steak. Yeah, well, you just popular.
Jeez, this is a bit chewy.
If she's a fussy eater, you should have given her my dog.
My dog, guaranteed to tempt fussy eaters.
And first prize for the most unromantic person in Adelaide...
G'day, Sharon.
..goes to Sharon's husband.
My husband, he got rather drunk, went to bed, and I thought, wow, there's a bad smell in the bedroom.
Oh, beautiful.
No. I rolled over... and I rolled into number 2.
Oh, Sharon!
Shit the bed!
Sharon, you are not serious.
I am serious, and if he's listening, he will kill me.
What's his name, Sharon?
Oh, I'm not saying.
No,
he will
come
kill
on.
Me.
Give his first name.
If you poo the bed, you deserve your name to be on radio. What's his name?
Dean.
Dean, you're a shocker.
They tend to be serial offenders, these sort of
poos. I think we found Adelaide's worst partner. He wins.
The poo jogger.
I think so.
The poo sleeper. Oh,
God. The top 5 things we've learned on Ruined Dits this week.
That's one hell of a bad dream.
Oh, that's horrendous. Hey, Roo, by the way, you were told that you had to get 60 shots away, just, you know, the downstairs department.
Don't get personal.
What number are you down to?
54.
Righto. Still a way to go, though.
No, I'm only joking.
Ruined Dits on Triple M.
He's a plumber.
Rudy's Plumbing. You block it, we unblock it.
He has a funny accent.
My mum's from Holland and my dad's from the Netherlands. It's a beautiful accent, isn't it?
And he also happens to be Australia's meanest TV reviewer.
Australian television, it is manure.
Please welcome to Ruined Dits for Breakfast.
Every week right here on Triple M.
Rudy Vanderstone, TV reviewer.
Oh, favourite part of the week. Let's get him on. How are you, Rudy?
I'm very well indeed. Hello to you, Dits. Hello to you, Roo, and everybody listening to Triple M in Adelaide.
Very good.
Rudy, we have a few troubles with a few ICs. I know you get stuff stolen out of you. Did you see the news yesterday about Scott Miller, former Olympic silver medal butterfly swimmer?
Absolutely. He took bronze bronze and silver in Atlanta.
Yeah.
Scott Miller, he was married to Charlotte Dawson, the late Charlotte Dawson, for a very short and well-publicised marriage.
Mm-hmm.
I think he had to take an AVO out against Charlotte in the end.
Yeah.
And it just adds to my growing case against swimming. Swimming is a sport that makes people lose their minds.
Yeah.
Let's have a look at the roll call. Thorpe, disorientated into rehab in 2014. Jeff Hugel, arrested coming out of the disabled toilets at Randwick with an alleged white substance on him. Grant Hackett smashed a grand piano, wore a singlet as underpants, disorientated in the foyer of a plush hotel before getting on board a Virgin flight and nipple-crippling someone. Tracy Vickham walked with a frame after taking a severe fall and is claiming to be homeless at the moment. I mean, swimming is a terrible sport where prepubescent people are woken up early in the morning and flogged in heavily chlorinated public pools for our lust for Olympic gold. It is child abuse. And I say to your parent, any parents listening today, smash your above-ground pool, throw the budgie smugglers in the bin, pop the floaties, because your kid will start following the black line and end up snorting the white one. So
that's a fair spray. That's good.
Swimming is a disgrace. It's for fish. All you're meant to do is stand waist-deep down at Glenelg, hopefully not get taken by a shark, get out and have a couple of Coopers and go home.
Are you reviewing swimming today, or you got something
there you
else?
Go. You throw a subject at me and I'll tee off on it. Swimming is a disgraceful sport. And, you know, you can become an Olympic champion and still have no muscle definition. What kind of a sport is that? Where you end up being a dolphin-shouldered softy that can, you know, why? Why,
and why would you want to swim in everyone else's urine?
And absolutely. And there's only, if you fall off a boat ditch, and the boat takes off and it doesn't know, you know, where you are and you can see the shoreline, what stroke are you using?
Not butterfly.
Butterfly?
No.
Who is it? Who's the idiot taking themselves to safety with butterfly? Or breaststroke? Yeah. No. In between screaming for help, it's freestyle.
What TV show are you reviewing today, Rudy, other than Olympic swimming?
No, as fun as it is killing off shows that are alive and well, this week I thought I'd have a crack at pulling the plug on a show that is already in a critical condition and an induced coma.
What is
the
it?
The Chase Australia.
Oh,
now
the
I
Chase.
Watch this before the news each night.
I have enjoyed The Chase myself. Bam, bam. I lied. I can't enjoy it. It's a noisy bunch of nonsense. But at first I hoped that Chase Australia, when I first sat down to watch it, would be a police body cam footage of Andrew O'Keefe being chased through Randwick at 1 o'clock in the morning.
That would be a good chase.
But was disappointed to find another lame quiz show we pinched from the Soap Dodgers.
Yeah.
Soap Dodgers being Poms.
Yeah,
okay. Yeah, of course you know that.
Yeah.
And hello to all of our English listeners in Adelaide.
Thanks for the UK strain.
The UK strain is interesting because it's kind of contradictory. It's a very active strain that doesn't mind doing a hard day's work. It still arrives here without a visa. Anyway, for those lucky enough to be unfamiliar with The Chase, the premise is four morons forming a team of challengers to take on The Chaser. The Chaser is one of the rotating cast of freaks that Channel 7 wheel out to show off their quizzing skills. It is the last kind of circus freak show allowed on television. They don't have a bearded lady, though, which I think is a problem for the show. They answer rapid-fire questions while in between rounds try not to be visibly cringing at Andrew O'Keefe's horrendous jokes. Now, the chasers include, I don't know whether you know this, but there's Goliath,
yes,
the shark, the super nerd, the governess, and the beast.
The beast.
Now, I assume the beast got his nickname because he's 6'6" and an obese eyesore.
Mm.
But it could be also because in real life, at 53 years of age, he married his 26-year-old cousin.
Ooh.
Oh,
did you know
what?
That?
No.
Yes, and that marriage has since failed.
Scandal.
Surprise, surprise. The beast indeed. What
Grandma,
a guy.
Grandma stepped in and said, you can't do this.
No, you can't do that. At least the beast found someone to share a bed with. No such luck for the other broken losers. They're just wasting their time answering easy questions to steal money off mouth breathers. Watching The Chase Australia made me wish that I was lying hogtied and bloodied in the boot of a Commodore, screaming down the Hume Highway, except I wouldn't kick out a tail light and signal for help.
Yeah.
Because I'd get rescued, and then there'd be a chance I might accidentally see another second episode of this excremental rubbish. I hate it.
Oh,
goodbye.
No. How many stars, Rudy?
It hasn't got stars. Oh. Andrew's gone, and so is this show. Never to be seen the light of day again.
See you, Rudy.
See you, Rudy.
Australia's biggest social experiment welcomes a new leading world expert.
I will be asking very direct questions.
Clinical sexologist.
How would you describe yourself as a lover?
Oh my God.
Alessandra Rampolla.
She might be the best sex expert in the world, but she probably can't help these guys. Please welcome to Triple M's Ruined Dits for Breakfast, Alessandra Rampolla.
That's a bit rough. Hey. Good morning, Alessandra.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah. The announcer doesn't have enough faith in me. What's up?
Well, we do need help. Can I just ask you?
What do you mean I can't help?
Well, yeah. A sexologist, you just talk about sex all day and all night.
Yes, pretty much. A sexologist is an expert in human sexual behavior. In my case, I'm also a marriage and family therapist, so I do the human couples dynamics, right? And how the sexual behavior contributes to that couple's dynamic. That's kind of my lens.
All right, that's good. Well, you're up against it on Married at First Sight. Have you seen this show before? These people were a little bit crazy.
Yes, some stories are extraordinary. I saw a couple of seasons. They were sent to me when I was pitched the show, and I think it's extremely interesting. It's just such an extremely interesting experiment to kind of delve into. Yeah.
Can I share a couple of my tricks with you? A couple of my, what works for me?
Oh, I'm sure she wants
to
hear this.
Okay. So
a wise
old fella once said to me when I was younger and first married, he said, you go to bed at night to sleep. He said, don't go to bed every night wanting sex because that's where you go to sleep. He said, surprise them. You got to pounce when they least expect it. So for example, if my wife's peeling the potatoes in the kitchen, I attack then.
She's gone quiet.
You see, the words you're using, pouncing and attacking, are not the best descriptors.
Okay.
You have to
right. Pouncing and attacking?
Sex.
Right.
You're not catching a rabbit.
Okay.
I would call you on that, yeah.
Okay.
I would call you on that. Where's the seduction here, dude?
Yeah, you don't know what you're dealing with. This is a bloke who, he likes a cuddle, Alexandra. Don't worry about that. But he's also, have a listen to this. He said a couple of times he's knocked it back. Have a listen to this.
Bloated dits, were you?
Can't perform on a full stomach. No.
Oh, come on.
No, this is the other thing.
How do you work it off?
No, this is the other thing that happens is she
just
knows this.
You now,
she knows this. So straight after about a 4-course meal, she go, oh, I'm up for it. Knowing full well that I'll say no. And then she go, well, can't blame me. Now, Alessandra, that was a little while ago.
Hang on. Any bloke who's got any go about him never knocks back their wife. Your excuse with a full stomach, that doesn't pass the test, does it?
I don't think it's... If you're really interested, then have a lighter meal and be ready.
Yeah, exactly. Never overeat, just in case.
All right. Now, Alessandra, I want to ask you about a couple of shows that you've done overseas. One is called School for Husbands. I'm very interested in that. What was that all about?
That's a show we did years ago for Fox Latin American Network. And it was basically the premise, not well-behaved spouses. People, men who were very stereotypically... a machista and, weren't helping around the house and just had terrible attitudes. And the premise was that they would go to school and we would reform them. So it was a reality show we did for Latin America years ago.
All right.
And it was very funny, but it's like the tone is very, I think for today's standards, just super outdated.
Yeah.
Outdated, yeah.
Okay.
It would not fly nowadays.
And there's another show called Sex Hospital. What about that one?
That was a project that we did in the UK some years ago for international cable. And it was couples that were having troubles and they would go on a retreat and we would follow. Like I would meet with them for couples and individual sessions. And they were all like very directly sex issues, difficulty with orgasm or BDSM fantasies that were not like well received by the partner or whatever pornography, maybe a partner watching pornography and the other person not being in agreement with the practice or whatever issues they were having, we would delve into over the day. So that was the premise of that
show. Interesting.
Alessandra, you have a very interesting job, and we look forward to seeing you on Married at First Sight. It's Monday night, 7:30 on 9. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Alessandra Rumpola, look it up, Roo. Married at First Sight. We could learn a fair bit.
Yeah, Monday at 7:30 on Channel 9.
104.7 Triple M.
He writes jokes for the front bar, and his mates call him Rosie. Please welcome to Triple M's Ruined Dits for Breakfast, Adam Rosenbach.
Rosie, good morning once again. Lockdown over there another time. What's going on?
Mate, we're getting used to it over here. I tell you what, a couple more lockdowns and I'm going to finish The Irishman. So things are going all right over here.
The Irishman goes forever, doesn't it?
Oh, mate. Three more and I'll get to the middle bit. You know what I love about The Irishman is when they have the flashbacks and Robert De Niro is supposed to be 30 and he walks into the store to beat someone up. And he's got like a, he's like cooped over. He can't even walk straight. He's got like a Zimmer frame with him.
How's your gambling and all that? Because in lockdown, that's all you do is turn into a stockbroker, don't you, and punt on the horses.
Mate, I tell you what, I took a gamble and I got some of the vaccine. but I got it on Gumtree. So,
that's good. What's that called?
They spelled Pfizer wrong, which is really weird, but I'm feeling a lot better. But it's all gone to crap here in Melbourne, and they're saying it's the nebulizer that did started this third lockdown. And you can't blame the guy. Like when you're going through duty free and you see a duty free nebulizer,
you got to grab it.
What are you supposed to do? You know?
You just grab them, don't you?
Yeah. And then my understanding is he took it back to the hotel room and he had sex with the nebulizer. That's
right.
Where the problem
is
was.
What happened? Right.
You don't want to be doing that.
So it's no good.
Hey, tell us about your new safety tool.
Well, apparently Uber are unveiling a new safety system, I suppose you would call it, as a part of Uber. So you can actually complain about the driver while you were in the car.
Right. That sounds safe.
Yeah, so apparently, if they're driving too fast, you're allowed to make a complaint about that. And I would actually give 6 stars to any Uber driver who was driving too fast and didn't break 500 metres out from a green light to attempt to get a red light.
Yes. Dodgy bloody
agree
Uber
with
drivers.
That. Yeah.
Not happy about that. And I'd love to complain about, the Uber drivers who are accelerating, then braking, and then accelerating, then braking. I'd love to complain about them, but I'm usually too seasick to be able to look at my phone. And also, I can't see through the tears to complain about their BO. But imagine we could do this with taxis. They would have been off the road in 1961.
No. Yeah. Not a high rating there for the taxi drivers.
No. But I had an
good
issue.
Good morning to all the cab drivers listening. I reckon they get a raw deal. Good morning to all the cabbies.
This was a Mr. Taxi Association
president
for a while. For a while he was whinging about Ubers and all that. And then next thing you know, he rocks up in an Uber.
How do you get around these days?
On my bike.
He's in gold class. For
Uber. Exactly.
Coming down from the hills.
I got an Uber last year, and so I'd picked up one night. I picked up some nachos, and
yes, that sounds better.
I was waiting to get into an Uber, and it pulled up, and I jumped in, and it turns out it was just a regular punter's car. And so the girl sitting in the driver's seat, she has absolutely kicked off, just telling me to get out of the car, you know, swearing at me and stuff, and I was like, all right, well, 0 stars for you, you know, and she didn't even offer me a mint. And like, how is this my fault? Like, you drive a Prius, you pay the price.
That's right. You know, exactly.
This is not on me.
Don't take any responsibility for that one. Hey, what happened to that doctor? Did I read this, that a doctor in India sold a baby?
Yeah, so apparently he had a couple of, patients in his hospital, and they couldn't pay their bill, so he took their baby and he sold it. Now this has Gumtree written all over it. I don't have a problem with it. What's the big deal? You pay your bills, there's no problem there, you know?
Do the dishes or sell your baby.
That's it.
Yeah, that's your thing. Option. I feel for the guy who bought the baby. I mean, you buy a baby, you expect to be able to keep it for life. Mm. I just don't see a problem with it. But you know what? The same thing happened to me at Crazy Horse once.
Right.
Yeah, except they said if I don't pay my bills, it was my kneecaps they said they were going to be selling.
They want to keep those,
And they'll throw you straight down the stairs afterwards. What's happening with Harry and Meghan?
Well, they're announcing another baby, so it's great to see another unemployed couple mooching off the government, which is great. They've had the ultrasound already and can reveal they're having a righteous wanker, which is awesome. And apparently,
a right royal
wanker, exactly. And they said that because the kid will be born in the States, it will be an American citizen. So they've kind of worked it out. He'll still be a royal, but with diabetes. So that's how that's going to work out.
Good one,
good Rosie. On you,
Rosie. Enjoy the last day of lockdown, buddy. Hopefully you get out today.
I'm looking forward to it, mate.
There he is, Adam Rosenbach, here on Triple M. 104.7 Adelaide's Triple M. Roo, you and I can't take all the credit for this lad, but, you know, we have helped him, haven't we, down at Next Generation?
Well, I think he's seen us there and thought, shit, I better train hard, otherwise I'm going to end up like these two blokes.
He's been inspired.
He's been riddled with injury, and he's come back and playing brilliant tennis. Tanasi Kokkinakis joins us. Good morning, Tanasi.
Good morning, fellas. How are we?
Very, very well, mate. I was very proud watching you the other night mix it with one of the best in the world. Gee, you would have been happy with your performance, although you would have loved to have won.
Yeah, I mean, you're never happy coming off second best, but that's probably the most positive I've been in some time, especially coming off a loss. You know, having two years out of the game, obviously the whole year missed last year with glandular fever and that. And then coming and playing that level off barely any matches definitely is a good sign. And although it did hurt to lose, especially after such a long match on court, it did show that what I'm doing is the good thing and I'm on the right track. And I think in 12 months' time with some more matches and conditioning, I get that match.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I mean, he's seeded five, this fella, Tsitsipas. I mean, he's unbelievable. Now, tell us about the emotion out there, an all-Greek affair. I mean, you're an Adelaide boy, but you've got the big Greek heritage, and the Greeks love him. What was it like out there?
Yeah, it was tricky. It was tricky hearing some Greek words support being thrown the other way as well. So it's not something I was used to, especially down in Australia, but I definitely do think more of the crowd was on my side, which I liked. It would have definitely been more rowdy, obviously, if it was a normal year, COVID-free. But, you know, we're just fortunate we got to play. But, yeah, it was definitely weird hearing Greek fans support him as well.
Gee, they're emotional. I was there the year Bagdadis got to the final. It's the loudest crowd I've ever heard.
Yeah, Greeks are different. I don't know what's in their water or what, but they're definitely some rowdy fans.
I think they're proud and I think they're passionate, and there's a big following big Greek following in Victoria as well. Tell us about your friendship with Nick Kyrgios. He certainly was in your corner when you were playing. Tell us about how you and Nick get along.
Yeah, we get along really well on and off the court. We share a lot of the same interests. We first met when we were nine. I was nine and he was 10 in Canberra playing a junior event. And since then, he was kind of head of the age group for the 1995 born class, and I was head of the age group of the 96 born class. And we just did all these tours together, traveling and playing a lot of matches together, playing doubles together. And we just developed a really strong friendship off the court. I think we get along. We both don't take life too seriously. And we just enjoy each other's company. So, yeah, he had another tough one, obviously, against Dominic Thiem. But it's always good watching him. You never know what you're going to get.
Seems like he's matured a bit, though, Cocky. And he's playing great tennis as a result. If he can just keep improving and keep it together, who knows what he could be?
Yeah, for sure. Obviously, he's a very, very talented player. And people love watching him. I said this before, it's more, you know, you either love to watch him or you love to hate him. So you kind of, you're going to watch him regardless, because you either want to see him lose or you want to see him just entertained. So, I think he has matured a little bit, but he won't change ultimately. Like, he is who he is, and he loves just having fun and being an entertainer on court. But I think, you know, for sure, if he can lock in certain moments, he's going to be even more of a hell of a player than he already is.
Now, two of the biggest famous clothing deals we've seen at the Australian Open over the years has to be when Casey Dellacqua wore Target clothes one year, and you came out in Kmart gear the other night. Now, has anything come of it? Have the sponsors started lining up?
There's a few little things in the works.
Good. Yeah.
Too far yet. I had a little safety culture patch on one of my black shirts and my white shirts that I was playing against Tsitsipas. So that was just something small and... Yeah, hopefully it's a sign of things to come. Some companies have come. But we'll see. We'll see. I've got to pick the right ones.
Good on you. Now, I want to ask you about your family. Am I right in saying, did your brother play for South Adelaide?
He did. He played the reserves.
Yeah, right. Okay.
The reserves for South.
So did you boys grow up down south? What was your background?
Yeah, we grew up and still live with our family when we're in Adelaide in Seacombe Heights.
Oh, yeah.
So, down there and, just training with... I was playing basketball initially when I was younger for the Sturt Sabres. Mm-hmm. And then, I got selfish and I felt like if my team lost and I played well, I'd be pissed off because we lost. And if my team won and I played bad, I'd still be pissed
off.
That
was a bad day. Well. Yeah,
so exactly. The only thing that could make me happy is if I played unbelievable and my team won. So I was like, that's not a great option. So I'm choosing a selfish sport.
Who's going to win the men's singles?
I kind of want to say a little bit of an outlier, but not really, in Medvedev. I want to see him kind of maybe grab it. Because I just like watching him and the way he plays. But, you know, it's hard to go past Djokovic. He's so clutch in these moments. But we'll see. Yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing someone different.
All right. And Ash Barty?
Ash Barty, yeah. She has a game that's not too common in the women's game. So, obviously, I think I saw on the betting favourite, she's favourite. It's obviously going to be tough to go past Serena and Osaka and these girls. But, you know, Ash has a game that can trouble a lot of especially female tennis players, the way she uses a variety. She mixes it up, loves to use her slice, and she's very tricky for other opponents. So it's going to be interesting to see how she goes.
Tanasi, thanks for joining us, mate. Seriously, Rue and I really love it when we run into you down at Next Generation. You're a nice lad. You're a very nice person, and you're a champion tennis player as well, mate. Well done this week, over the last week or two, and let's hope it's a stepping stone to having a big 12 months.
Appreciate it, fellas. You guys inspire me hard on that circuit training with the rowing machine. So I see you guys almost about to pass out. I'm like, God, I've got to go.
When you're world number one, we'll claim it, mate, all right?
Done.
Good on you, mate.
Cheers, fellas.
Well done. Tanasi Kokkinakis, what a lad and what a player. Rue and Ditz here on Triple M. Rue, I don't think I've ever spoken to or interviewed a real-life spy, but we are about to. This is exciting.
Looking forward to it.
We're talking about a real-life James Bond. A fellow called Jack Beaumont has written a book, and it's called The Frenchman, and it's all about, well, the world of espionage. It's fictional, but it's based on fact, I think. Let's get him on. Jack Beaumont, good morning.
Good morning.
This book, I take it, it's from all of your life experiences. How sort of accurate or real is it?
Well, it's more in the vein as John Le Carré than James Bond. It is quite accurate, so it's based on my real life.
Yeah.
So my family and everything, and the mission and the story itself is a mix of different real parts.
How do you juggle family life, being a dad with kids and wife, and then being a spy?
That's what is really hard. It's you know, every day you have to become someone else. Every day you have to use one of your false identities. And you're going away, or it's just for one day, or you're going away for a few days or a few weeks. It depends. And then you have to come back and make sure that you're not followed, and make sure that you can come back home without taking any bad guys with you who could identify your family. And then you have to switch in dad and husband mode, and then say goodnight to the kids and act like a normal dad. You know?
What about becoming an ex-spy? How do you all of a sudden not be a spy anymore? Because you've obviously been exposed to so many, I guess, ordinary or bad people around the world in your lifetime.
Yeah, no, it's true. And I mean, I was in the military for 20 years. I started as a fighter pilot. And then I was a special forces pilot. And then I was a spy. And I retired 7 years ago. And I joined the industry. And I left to Australia, as my wife's Australian. And it's good because it's far away from the countries I used to work in or against.
But do you ever think that, you know, have you done something bad enough to someone that, you know, might want to track you down? I mean, you're writing a book with your name on it and telling a few yarns here. Do you ever worry that someone will put the pieces together and fly to Australia and find you?
Well, it's first, it's not my real name. Jack Beaumont is a pseudonym.
You tricked me.
And then it's a possibility, but I mean, it was a long time ago, and becoming public, actually, it's the best way to protect yourself.
All right. Tell me, watching a James Bond movie with all of the gadgetry and the different tricks that they use and the things that happen, how real is that? How accurate?
Well, we do have some gadgets, but not at the level of James Bond. And especially in the French services, you know, you can replace the Aston Martin by a Peugeot.
Yep.
It's not exactly the same. But No, we do have some gadgets, but it's more like a technological, like, for example, how to hide some files on a phone or on something. So, for example, if you get caught at the customs at the border with your camera or your phone, and even if they check as much as they want, they won't be able to find anything in it. What's this kind of things?
What's the worst situation you've been in? And worst is in, you know, your heart rate's going 100 miles an hour and you think you could die. Like, you just think, oh no, I've gone too far here, I'm in too deep, or this is all over.
Well, the situation you see in the Frenchman in the book, where I've been facing a lot of bad guys in this period of being a spy, but when I've been facing this guy and this level of bad people, it was very hard to stay calm and to stay normal without showing that you're scared, because of course you are. And you are in another country where it's really dangerous. People were hanged on the light poles in the streets, and I knew that if I was caught, then I would be one of them.
You know? What?
How widespread is a spy network around the world? And I ask this question because we do hear some of the great work that's done. Like, so often we will hear that in London, for example, a terrorist plot was thwarted. So there had to have been someone on the inside that, you know, exposed what was about to happen. So there must be many, many spies in each country.
Yes, there is. So some countries have more spies than others, and some countries are more focused on human intelligence, when some others are more focused on signal or communication intelligence. It was a bit of the mistakes, let's say, of the US for a while, that they've been focusing on what they call the Echelon program, which is communication interception. But of course, you can imagine that the terrorists, for example, when they are talking on the phone, they're not saying, important things. They're just saying, like, okay, let's catch up, like we said, you know? And so you don't have any keywords like Al-Qaeda or whatever in it. So it's impossible to track this. And you have like millions and millions of communication per second. So the human intelligence is the key, especially today with the technologies. And so to grab this human intelligence, you have to be at the contact of the bad guys. You have to be at the contact of the people who know. So yes, you have to be infiltrated everywhere.
What sort of industries are you spying on? What sort of bad guys are you chasing? Can you give us an example of what you've been involved with?
In industry, you mean?
Yeah. What are their professions been? Like drug dealers or bank robbers or
Well, it depends. You have some people, of course, who are. We are working a lot on counterterrorism, so you have a lot of people who are terrorists, but you have a lot of people who are, let's say, intermediates between terrorists and other people. So they are kind of businessmen, but they are doing a bit of every kind of business. So it can be drug dealing, it can be weapon dealing, it can be. Women, it can be anything, unless all they want is money. And those guys are usually ready to take some money for anything, and ready to betray even their own family or wife and kids. I've seen guys dropping their wife and kids to death for money.
The what? Dropping their wife and kids, what do you mean?
Abandoning one of those guys asked to be taken away and hidden just to save his own life, and he knew doing so that his wife and kids would be clearly killed. And he just asked for himself, and when we offered him to protect the family as well, he just said no, just for me, and I want my money.
Save me and throw them my wife and kids.
Yeah.
Gee whiz, I won't ask who that was. But
now, what about the day you decided to retire from this? That you got to be an ex-spy. Gee, how elated was your wife?
Well, it's the thing is when you're hired to become a spy, what they ask from you is, of course, some high level of intellectual honesty, because they're gonna send you in very difficult situation. Where you are by yourself, so they have to rely on you. But in the same time, they ask you to develop as much as you can your dark side. And one morning you realize that actually your dark side is taking more than 50% of your soul. So you look at yourself in the mirror, and you've been developing it so well that you look at yourself in the mirror and you think, I'm a monster. Yeah. And so that's where you know that's a good moment to retire. And my wife said, look, I can't recognize you anymore. And what you've been doing in your life, being a fighter pilot or whatever, and being a spy, it would be great if you could find a real job now.
Like being a dad full time.
Yeah. Jack, thanks so much for talking to us. It's an interesting story, and what a life you've led. It's amazing stuff. It is real life spy and espionage. So the book is called The Frenchman, written by Jack Beaumont, based on his experiences. And Jack, I'm going to enjoy reading this, mate. Thanks so much for talking to us.
Thank you very much for receiving me.
Triple M. Get out your Zimmer frames, chuck on a cardi, comb your hair over and crank up the tranny.
The grumpy guy story's starting to come into focus a little bit here.
On Ruined Dits, it's time for Grumpy Old Men.
Oh, I look forward to this every week, Roo. It's educational, isn't it, to hear from the grumpy old men?
Oh, sure is. That's why we've got him on, the wise old man. We've got Praddy the old farmer. Good morning, Praddy.
Yeah, how are you, fellas?
Reedy, the old boss of the Adelaide Football Club. Good morning, Reedy.
How are you, man?
We've subbed out one struggling sort of whinging publican for another. Pete Hurley joins us today. G'day, Pete.
Morning, fellas.
Oh, that's an unfair intro, Pete.
Pete wasn't that happy. He said, gee, it's a shame that the only way I can get on the radio is to be a grumpy old man. boys, question. Back in the old days, the wives and mothers just used to be the cooks in the house, but got a feeling it's changing a lot because Ditz does a lot of cooking, I do a lot of cooking, and I think that's the way it is in a lot of people's houses.
I know,
houses.
For example, I've been to Johnny Reed's place a few times for lunch or dinner. Reedy, you just dominate on that barbecue, don't you? You love to get the steaks out, and it just makes me think that you blokes do a lot of the cooking. Would I be right in saying that?
No, do a lot these days, particularly when you've got a bit more time. And, you know, I actually enjoy it, and it splits the load a bit, and the old days, I mean, mothers were home and all that sort of thing. These days, wives are working. She's the same as men. So Why wouldn't you split the load? The quail, my quail.
The quail's legendary, your joint.
The quail.
And chili, sweet chili sauce lasagna. That's another one.
Wow. So, sweet chili sauce lasagna. You're kidding.
Yeah, it's a beauty.
I need
it's
to get. I need to find out about that. Right. Peter Hurley, I've been to your place. You showed me something one day, or I just observed it, cooking on the chimney.
Oh yes, I'm good at that. But like, I didn't really anticipate that this was part of married life. As you blokes know, you get married for two reasons. And one of them say you've got someone to cook for you.
Pete.
Yeah, and don't tell us about the other reason. I think we know that one.
What is the other reason, Pete?
No, we won't go there.
Praddy, what's irking you at the moment, Praddy? Surely there's something annoying you.
Yeah, there is. Just another evidence of the woke cancel culture that I picked up on a bedsit.com. Labour wards in hospitals are now being encouraged to remove the word breastfeeding just to appease the transgender society.
What do you mean removing breastfeeding?
Oh, well, and they want to call it chest feeding.
Oh, get out.
Or human milk.
Human milk?
Or human milk. And let me say, I was a breastfed baby and I've never been weaned.
I don't know if you're a strong advocate for it. I don't
know. Is that fair thinking, Freddie? They're not saying breastfeeding.
No, they want to call it chest feeding. To cater for the emotions of the transgender community.
Righto.
Get out of town.
Reedy, what's irking you?
Well, mine's around tennis, boys. I am sick to death of watching players get four balls in their hands. Look at them,
yeah.
And then throw a couple back to the boys. Say, "Go and pick this up, will you, please?" And they don't even squeeze them. they don't do anything. I just say to myself, "Well, what the hell are they? They are prima donnas."
Seriously. Is it time wasting? Is it just getting an extra breath, or what are they doing?
I don't know, mate. It does worry me.
All right. Any thoughts for the day, Praddy?
Yeah, I've got a thought. It follows on from the birthing and babies.
If women are so perfect at multitasking, how come they can't have a headache and sex at the same time?
Spot on.
Yeah, we need an explanation,
please. Yeah, I'll tell that to Sarah next time she uses it.
All right. Good on you, fellas. Well done.
See ya.
The grumpy old men.